Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right. Thank you so much for staying with us. Let's have a very honest conversation. I think a lot of us have been watching so much that has been happening around the country. Some of it has gotten us quite angst, I must say. And we thought it's time to sometimes just take a moment, reflect, add your voices. This is a really good time for you to add your voice. We'll give this conversation all the way until 10 o'clock just so that you have enough space to ventilate however, whatever you're feeling. 086-000-959. We want to talk about diversity. I couldn't think of a better person to talk to than founder and CEO of Diversity, Terry Oakley-Smith, who's in studio with us to try and unpack all the things that we are experiencing, that we are seeing, that are appall us, and help us just place ourselves in what's going on at the moment. Good evening and welcome, Terry.
Good evening. Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
And thanks for your patience, too.
That's also a pleasure.
Thank you. It's so difficult to decide where to begin, and we're going to ask you to lead us on this one here, because there was a time, I think, where we were under the illusion that we're doing well as a new democracy, and it all looks very glossy, and we all look so happy. You know, we were on a happy pull, and it didn't take very long for that to quickly we were sobered up very quickly, and reality sunk in, and we showed our very ugly colors again, because there is no way we're going to erase our history without actually dealing with our history in the way that needed to be dealt with, and I don't think we did that. Where do you think we need to start where we are right now as a country that seems to be quite divided at the moment? What has to happen? What kind of conversations need to happen to try and, I suppose, start healing before we can even get to the point where we are, you know, speaking from one hymn book? What has to happen now?
I agree with you, Pumela, that this is very late on. We're very late off the starting blocks. Yeah. I think, like many people, one thought in 1994 particularly, that things, you know, had the potential to go well. And in a sense, I think this GNU is quite a wave of nostalgia, but nothing like the original GNU. Mm. I think the problem, if we look at issues around race and gender, is that we actually haven't done very much at all. You know, I think from the moment that Archbishop Tutu, God rest him, announced that we were a rainbow nation, we were all so delighted to take on this mantle of rainbowism. And in fact, it never actually was. We're not a rainbow nation by any means. We have a lot of work to do if we want to become a rainbow nation. You know, the percentage of social interaction between black South Africans and white and South Africans of other colors is minimal. Mm. So we're not using, we've got incredible diversity in this country in terms of race, gender, all of the things, language, culture, nationality, but we're not using it because we have never sat down and had those difficult, awkward, uncomfortable conversations that we really need to have in order to actually genuinely get to know each other and be able to work effectively with each other.
Does it mean that we have to start with accepting? And when I say we, I mean all of us, white South Africans, black South Africans, that for us to deal with the matter, it's never going to be easy or comfortable. It is going to require us to have the kind of will, I think, to accept that it's going to be hard. And no conversation is going to be easy if we really have to deal with this thing properly.
You know, I think the onus really is on white South Africans. Mm. We have white privilege. We can't pretend that even 30 years later we're not sitting in the pound seats. Mm. You know, we came to 1994, we got off scot-free. After all those years of apartheid and before that, colonization. And white South Africa hasn't done anything. There's been no reparation. And, you know, it's not surprising to me that people feel angry and that it's difficult for people to reach out to one another. Mm. I think that we as white South Africans need to become much more humble and much more prepared to listen and much more prepared to take a back seat. And I think the kind of conversations that I'm thinking of need to happen in all organizations. They need to happen in schools, as we can see from the latest incidents at Pretoria Girls High and Pinelands. Mm. They need to happen also in universities. It wasn't so long ago that Fees Must Fall really made a big dent here in our rainbowism. So, you know, I think it's true that we haven't done anything, and I think we as whites need to take responsibility for that.
It's complex because you have black people who themselves advance whiteness and advance white supremacy, which make it very difficult. Mm-hmm. And in a way, who themselves defend white structural racism. Mm-hmm. And that makes it difficult because often those are the people who are at the boardroom table, who are at the seat with whiteness, and are going to be the kind of black person, the token black person, that will allow whiteness and its structures to excuse this idea that we're all okay now.
Mm. I mean, I think one sees that very much in schools as well. Mm-hmm. The kind of parents who think, you know, if my child has a white teacher, mm-hmm. you know, that's number one. You know, never mind all the yeah. black teachers who are struggling to actually get positions in schools and who are sort of sidelined into teaching isiZulu, where they could be teaching science or mathematics. So I know, and I think that's to do with internalized oppression, Pomelo. I think that, you know, all those years of apartheid damage everyone. Mm-hmm. And obviously there must be many black people, I can't obviously speak for black people, who feel still damaged by all those years, mm-hmm. who look at their parents and think about how their lives were, mm-hmm. or their grandparents. So I think internalized oppression has a lot to do with black people who support whiteness.
So where do we begin?
Well, I think we have to be. I think, first of all, I mean, back in 1994, wouldn't it have been wonderful if they'd had a government department of transformation or reconciliation or something? Because, frankly, nothing has ever been led from the top for us. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have tried in their own ways, using their own initiatives to start these kind of conversations in churches, people working in organizations. But I think it needs a real push. There was a bit of a push when the Employment Equity Act mm-hmm. Was promulgated, but so many organizations just disregarded. There was huge resistance to BBBEE, mm-hmm. You know, which is still ongoing. So, you know, I think unless there's a push from really the top, and for example, the Department of Labor gets real and gets some competence in there to actually monitor and measure organizations' ability to comply with the Employment Equity Act. I mean, that would be a great start. As well as, obviously, the BEE, BBBEE. You know, as white people, we reject these things. And we don't see that for the country it's a positive, as well as, you know, for ourselves as individuals and organizations.
Hmm. I just wonder, you know, you make mention of the fact that there would have to be a push from the top. And in a way, for me, you have these, as you say, these policies, BBBEE, even BEE itself, then we have these programs, anti-racism weeks, and the language that comes out, you know, at rallies and all of that, that speaks to the fact that we all want to have an equal society. But then when you look very closely, hardly anything gets done in real terms. Companies are able to get away with not doing the right thing and literally paying not to do the right thing.
Yes.
And government allowing it to happen. Not only does government allow it to happen, government continues to give it more business. So it makes it quite difficult then to be quite optimistic about what actually has to happen? What actually has to happen? Because I'm not sure we can really trust what government says anymore, because it doesn't really seem to come to fruition.
I mean, I think government's response all along the line has been, let's set up a commission of inquiry. Mm. Let's set up a working group. Mm. I mean, I've sat on some of those commissions of inquiry. Mm. I remember back in 1998, the terrible things that happened at Freiburg High School, mm. where white teachers and parents moved into classrooms where there were black pupils and beat them up, literally. Mm. Where black pupils had to sit in dining rooms with a table with a black cloth on it, mm-hmm. while white pupils were sitting, guess what, with a white cloth. That was how they knew. So I think commissions of inquiry, working groups are not going to cut it. And something like employment equity does have the potential to really bring about mm-hmm. important changes in the organizations, but only if it's properly monitored. So that's why I say it needs to start from the top. It needs to be driven by ministers, by the president himself. I sort of get the feeling that, you know, in our family meetings and things, there's almost a buy-in to, you know, that we're all one lovely rainbow family. I don't get the feeling that there's a push and, you know, a real stance to get South Africa really moving and changing.
Why do you think that us, as South Africans, we've allowed ourselves to be fooled in this way? 30 years, I don't think is a short time. I think I hear a lot of people say, no, you know, we're a young democracy. I'm not sure I buy that. Why do you think South Africans have been so patient?
Well, I guess I think it's black South Africans that have been so patient,
yes,
to be honest.
That's what I mean.
I mean,
yes.
I think we as whites have been rather impatient with things like change, with things like transformation, employment equity, diversity, and all of those things. And I think, you know, maybe one of the terrible side effects of all those years of apartheid is that it taught black people to sit back and wait.
Yeah.
And one day, and what the political parties said, you know, if you look back into the days of PAC, even ANC back then, you know, it was all of a question of it will come right, we'll fight, you know, and somehow it hasn't and it doesn't. And we're living under this label that we're actually not truthfully living to.
I want to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm very happy to take your calls on 086-000-0959. You can send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. We're talking diversity, and what's taking so long for South Africa to finally deal with the issue of diversity. And when I mean diversity, it's not just race, it's gender, it's all kinds of, you know, our diversity in us. It's issues of age, it's issues of religious tolerance, all of that. I want to hear your take on this and why it's taking us so long to deal with diversity in this country. Terry Oakley-Smith is the founder and CEO of Diversity, and she really is a diversity expert. She's been at it for a while, and I thought it's good to talk to somebody about where we are at and why it's so difficult for us to deal with issues of diversity in this country. You've seen most recently the issue of Pretoria Girls High. There was an issue also at a school in the Western Cape where there were girls who were caged. It was a whole, I mean, it was just slaves, really appalling. And these kids were born post-apartheid South Africa. So something is going on there, and we're not honest about what conversations are happening. We are talking about what's not happening, but there are other conversations happening that keep reinforcing racism. Mm. And I think we're not even honest about that. Terry, thanks again for staying with us. I've already got a call. Can you just pop in your headphones so that we can try and engage with Simpiwe, who's calling from Daveyton? Good evening and welcome. Simpiwe, welcome.
Good evening, ma'am. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome.
I'm good. Hmm. You know, you've touched on a very sensitive issue today, diversity. Mm. Diversity, to me, to my understanding, it's been there from very, very long time. I grew up in Newcastle.
Okay.
I'm born in 79.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at my own city, the small capital city in KZN, we all had that tendency, okay, umuntu onemali uyena esikwili. Then I move up into Joburg. Then I started following a politician. Like, we are still left behind in a name of saying Ubaba Nelson Mandela was khulula in a way ukuthi now that our freedom is based on somebody else's abilities with us uplift. If we never had that such of a thought, we could have been far better than any other person. But we all always hold into that it was Lwela for 27 years in prison. Then we came in 94, there was a democracy. That thing still like relies especially on us and black people, because other nations out there, they are exploding in such a way with now we are supposed with how come we are living in one planet but we are still facing the same reality as black people, but other people are succeeding.
Simpiwe, thank you so much for that. Terry, your comments on
Simpiwe. I mean, that's makes one really think. I know Newcastle, where you come from, and I can see the terrible discrepancies and differences in terms of the lives that people lead. And really also recognizing you as a young person and thinking about the huge number of young black people that are unemployed, I can understand why you feel hopeless.
Mm-hmm. I want us to... Oh, Smoo is on the line from Turfontein. Good evening and welcome, Smoo.
Hi, Tanara. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling, Smoo.
Good. I'm hoping to share some optimism about our progress and diversity, right? Mm-hmm. Where I would like to start, let's start with maybe racism. Mm. If we look at a country like America, if there's still racism in America, I know blacks are a minority in America, but blacks have been free for ages in America. And there's very successful blacks, you know, like your Oprahs and your Jay-Z's and other educated blacks that we don't know them by name, maybe professors and so forth, right? But there's still that aspect of racism. So, I don't know, is it a part of society that can be eradicated completely? Maybe, I don't know. I think that part, we just have to work around. If you look at the story of South Africa and where we are now, I feel the fact that you can now go to a, let's say, a bank in Sandton, and in that bank you'll find people of color working as teller and maybe even a floor manager. Then obviously as you go up, then it becomes white. I feel like maybe let's not disregard those achievements. You know, when progress happens, the way the universe, if we consider the Big Bang theory, there was a Big Bang, there were like explosions, as they put it, and then the dust started settling, and then the rocks started getting created, and then the planets got created, and then the solar systems got created, and then the galaxies as we know them. I feel like it's a work in progress. The fact that there are schools like Africans-only schools, and that is being challenged, right? Where you will have a school in the township that has 60 learners in a class, and then you will have a school where you maybe have 15 learners in a class. And because it's the Africans-only school, and they will say, no, if you are, no matter the race, if you are willing to go there and study in Afrikaans, fine, but they know that the majority of the young kids won't be able to go there and learn in Afrikaans. And that is being challenged.
Smoo, don't leave. Just hang on there for a minute, because I think Terry would like to engage you a bit more. Terry?
Okay.
Yeah, I think that Spoo is absolutely right, that we mustn't completely forget about the progress that has been made. And I agree with you, too, about the suggestions around language policy for schools. But I think that you can't eradicate racism in one move, absolutely. And as you say, it's still alive and well in America. And even recently in England, I don't know if you've been following, for the last three or 4 days, the riots in the streets, which are to do with race and are to do with Islamophobia. So inherently, as human beings, we tend to resist people who we see as different, whatever the difference might be. So I think that, you know, yes, there has been progress, and yes, it's good that we see some people working, but Spoo, there's a huge majority of black people that are not working.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe you need to, we need to think of it in a way, you know, you need to reflect on your own privilege. Because sometimes that's the thing, you know, you speak from your own personal position that makes it difficult for you to see why others are impatient about the progress of where we should be.
Okay. Can I add then that we also need, as a black person, I will point at our leaders and I would say we need leaders with a conscience, right? I feel like our leaders, they, first of all, a lot of them, not all of them, a lot of them don't have a conscience, and a lot of them don't have a sense of pride. And what do I mean by that? They've got this entitlement that most of them, they fought for the struggle, and now they want to pay themselves for that, right? And that's number one. And number two, they don't mind being involved in projects, like the Alexandra Project. And a person will have a name, his name, on that project. And they won't have that sense of pride that if I get a street built or if I get a RDP house built, if it's got my name on it, it must have this stamp of quality, you know? So I feel like before we point at other people and other races, we also need to clean our house, you know, especially when it comes to our leaders.
A lot to think about there. Spoo, thank you. Terry?
I think the point about leadership is a very salient point. And also the generation gap. Yes, so many of our leaders are really elderly now. You know, where are the young leaders? The huge generation gap. And then also your remarks about the Alexandra Project, and we know who you're referring to, but I won't mention names on air tonight. But I think that we need those good, strong leaders to really lead us through this journey. And we certainly haven't had those. I can't think of any leaders who made an issue of trying to, who were anti-racist, who were supportive of issues of diversity. I mean, in all the speeches that one hears, these things just are not alluded to. And instead, we continue to paint this portrait of us as a really together, you know, inspiration to the world type of country. and you don't have to drive very far from Sandton to see that's not true.
Dr. Selby in Orange Farm, good evening and welcome.
Good evening. How are you, Pamelo?
I'm well. How are you, Dr. Selby?
I'm blessed beyond measure.
Excellent. Go ahead.
Yeah. Pamelo, you know, we've got a serious problem with our mind. And the problem is in our mind, Pamelo. We are damaged in our mind in such a way that I am taught that as long as I'm above Pamelo, I must be satisfied. As long as I'm better than Pamelo financially or with life, I become satisfied. I no more worry about anything around me. That is why we do not care about the segregation that is in South Africa. Because I'm staying in town. Pamelo is staying in township. I no more care about Pamelo. I'm near the whites now. I feel superior. I don't care anymore about what the whites did to us, the gap that is between me and the white man. No, I don't care anymore about it. Because I'm better than Pamela. That is what is planted in our mind. You remember in the olden days, a supervisor, he was regarding himself better than the workers. Not knowing that he's also being abused by these employers. This is what is in our mind. That is why we can't do anything with this segregation that is here in South Africa.
Thank you, Ntata Selby.
I think Selby was talking very from a real life perspective about the impact of internalized depression, which we spoke about a little earlier.
I've got Temba in Heidelberg. Thanks for holding, Temba. Good evening and welcome.
Morning, my lady. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. And your guest there.
Thank you.
Okay.
Evening, Temba.
Let me begin by saying I would like to contribute on two matters relating to racism and sexism.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe I should begin with the matter of racism, which I'm not intending to dwell much on. But what I can say is, if anyone have not read a book written by a Nigerian American entitled The Capitalist Nigger, I think it will be advisable for anyone, particularly a black person, to read that book. And once you read that book, I promise you, you will definitely not. If you were blaming Michael Jackson for what he did, changing his color scheme, you will definitely not blame him anymore after reading that book. Okay, I'm done with that part. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me finalize my story with sexism. I think sexism is perpetuated by us members of the society, you know.
We are both listening to you, Temba. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I think sexism is very much more perpetuated by us members of the society in general, you know, because men and women ranging right from our families, you know, for since time immemorial, we've been in support of this thing so-called patriarchy system. You get my point? Because what bothers my mind is the fact that to this day, you know, parents are still buying their girl kid a doll baby, and then your son, you buy him toy cars and trucks and stuff like that, you know. Yeah, I think it is high time we buy them the same, the same toys, you know, which the likes of cars, houses and stuff like that. By doing that, in so doing, you are instilling the spirit of independence in your daughter, you know. You are instilling the spirit of ambition, you know. The spirit of vision, you know. The spirit of witness, you know, or of acknowledging the witness in herself. That's my point.
Thank you so much, Temba. Terry, your response to that?
Yep. I think it was very good that Temba raised sexism in addition to racism.
Yes.
Because these things are often so related. We call it intersectionality, where you can be black, but you can be Muslim, possibly. You can be a person who has a disability. And all of these things impact on the kind of person you are. Mm. And I like, too, what Temba says about the responsibility we have to bring up our children in a way that it's not sexist. Mm. And for example, when you use the example of buying the doll baby for the little girl, I can tell you that doll baby will be a white doll baby. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt, Temba. Mm-hmm. So this would be a very good opportunity to begin to bring up your daughter or your daughters in a way that they recognize it's not just sexism, it's racism as well, and all the other kind of things that impact on us in a diverse country such as ours.
Terry Oakley-Smith is my guest. I'm going to take a quick break. I'll continue taking your calls on 086-000-0959. The WhatsApp note is on 063-688-0959. We're talking diversity. Terry Oakley-Smith, she's the founder and CEO of Diversity. I wanted to just quickly touch on one thing before we go back to our calls. Non-racism and anti-racism. Just the distinction for us there.
I think there's a very important distinction, and I'm so glad you asked that question, Pomelo. If we're non-racist, it's a passive stance. We sit back, we sometimes even pride ourselves that this is not me, I don't do that kind of thing. But an anti-racist involves somebody being active. So, for example, if I see something racist, I don't just stand by and watch, but I actually try and get involved and support people. So it's the difference between being an ally, really, and just being a bystander. I think that's the easiest way to put it.
We often allow ourselves to have conversations that you can have in private dinner parties, in private braais, in our inner circle. And we allow, even as you cringe, you allow your friends, your family, your peers to get away with things that just should not be said or even thought or even allowed. We should ostracize those people. But we do have this culture, don't we, where we, as long as it's here. These are things we say amongst only ourselves, and you know, just don't say it in public, don't say it on the radio. But you can call this person whatever, or you can do this and you can do that, as long as it's here.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's true. It's about that feeling of being in a particular group. Mm. And if you think about that Pretoria Girls High, the fact that I think it was 12 white girls formed a WhatsApp group.
Whites only WhatsApp group.
In 2024. I find it so sad to think that there can be an environment in a school like that, which is a whites only group. Mm. I'm not saying that everyone has to be friends and there are going to be differences and differences of opinion. Mm. But I think the leadership of that school clearly hasn't done anything to inculcate that sense of we're all here, you know, what do we have in common? Because teaching about diversity, as I've been doing for so many years, is not just about teaching about differences. Mm. It's also teaching about all the ways in which we're similar. Mm. Pomelo, you and I are both women, so we have that in common. Yeah. We probably both have children. Yeah. We have that in common. Mm-hmm. We're both probably quite forthright and independent, and we have that in common. Yeah. So I think looking at diversity properly, one needs to start with, what do we have in common? Mm-hmm. How are we similar here? And having understood how we're similar gives us a safe platform to then move on to, okay, how are we different?
Mm-hmm. Yes, when we leave here, we'll all be worried about our safety as women in South Africa.
Exactly.
I mean, that's something we have in common. Thabo in Kagiso, good evening and welcome.
How are you also, Pamela?
I'm good. Welcome.
Thank you very much. And greetings to our lovely, brave guest.
Oh, it's Terry. Yes, go ahead, Thabo.
It takes guts for someone to acknowledge the wrongs that were done by a group that she belongs to and say it as it is. Mm-hmm. We are very grateful for that. Mm-hmm. Diversity is a beautiful thing to have, you know, particularly as a nation. as it has so much qualities in it, and it can enable us to achieve our greatness as a country. And as you speak at the moment, it's us black people. I obviously I'm an African, mm-hmm. and it's mostly us who are showing the interest and yearning to achieve such. And the other group, which particularly the white groups, white people group, are not showing any interest at all. Mm. That becomes a great concern. And as time goes, this is really a problem, because it's not like people are not seeing all of this. They are seeing, and the anger is growing. Mm. And it will be to the best interest of the white people to start acknowledging their wrong and correct them. We're not saying they must give up everything that they have. Mm. All we ask to take with what they've got, they can be able to contribute that towards enabling that majority of Africans also reach a standard where we can all make a living.
Yeah.
And if they don't do that, it becomes a problem in the future where an issue of chaos can erupt, mm-hmm. and whether they like it or not, the freedom that we attained, the way we have, has shown that as time goes, when people becomes enough of the issue, they're able to stand up and address that. Mm-hmm. So we don't want that. With what we've achieved so far, with the progress that we've attained, we've made great strides. You know, we've got to where we are as a country through so much sacrifice, particularly made by black people. Mm. I think it is time that people like our guests, that we give them such platforms to continue making others who are not interested aware, not only in stations that are listened by black people, but also go to these white stations that are listened by white people and say these things and speak directly to them, so that they take note that if this is not addressed, it becomes a ticking bomb that will then force us to go backwards. Otherwise, we've made great progress. We are where we are because of so much sacrifice. That has to be acknowledged. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Terry.
Wow, Thabo, I really support everything that you say there, and especially about the sacrifice that mainly black people meant. I mean, when you look at those days of struggle, I think you can count probably on the fingers of one hand people of other races who were involved in those days. And I think you're right, our diversity, we have this incredible potential to really use these differences to become an even more powerful nation, a nation where, you know, a person can get a job no matter what their color is, where our economy starts to boom. I was also very interested where you said that it's black people that are showing interest in these things, because I've found that very often, well, not very often, but often in the work I do, going in with my black colleagues to do a workshop, for example, and you suddenly find that everyone sitting there is black. And you think, how can I talk about, I mean, there's obviously diversity of language, nationality, culture, etc. But the real elephant in the room, which is racism, can't be discussed in the absence of the people that have been perpetuating it. So I think that's a very true thing that he raises, that it's mainly black people that are showing interest. And I also share very much your concern about what will happen if we just allow the anger to grow and we don't actually do something and make steps to try and resolve it. Because, I mean, I think it's a very, very serious point you raise, and it's one that I share.
It's obviously, it benefits white people to hold on to the status quo. And there is that sense of, you know, defensiveness when the issue comes up. You see it all the time. What conversations should white people be having right now before we get to what Thabo has just raised now? Because it is that resentment is brewing. Inequality is the biggest elephant in the room. We don't want to talk about it. You spoke about leadership, But in a way, for me, you even have a leadership that's quite weak in a sense, mm-hmm. because we really don't have economic freedom in the sense that we can, as a majority, have a voice that can actually activate some change. We don't. Yes, we have leadership, but, you know, money, actually, as Sifudi said, I think it was Dr. Selby, sometimes is at the center of why change doesn't happen as quickly as it should.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, I think that we really lack that determined leadership that can actually talk about these issues. Mm. And I mean, the inequality in South Africa is completely heartbreaking. Shocking. I mean, you know, you just have to drive not very far, say in the Eastern Cape, to look at what total degradation there is, how people are being supposed to live. And then you can go to Alexandra Township, which is much nearer, and then you cross the road and you're in Sandton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, and yet we talk about these things, but somehow our governments haven't managed to actually do anything about them in terms of the policies that they make around the economics of the country.
Mm.
So I think it, you know, it demands much more strong leadership. And I don't know whether this government, so-called government of national unity, is going to be able to really do anything about it.
Do you think white people want change?
That's such a difficult question. I mean, there must be some that do. But I think a lot of people don't even think about change. Mm. They're quite comfortable. You know, many of them, not all of them. I mean, I'm going to be flooded with calls now saying, you know, telling me how poor and how difficult life is. But, you know, why would one want change when things are so, you know, directed in one's favor?
Mm.
You know, our education is very much better. Most of us can afford private health care, so we don't have to go to public hospitals. You know, we're all dealing with, you know, a difficult situation with money, but we've got probably enough to get by.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at people who have to live on 350 rand a month. I mean, most white people will spend that buying a quarter of their shopping trolley.
I've got Tuso in Pretoria. Tuso, thanks for your patience. Good evening and welcome.
Greetings, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Greetings to you too as well.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Two things that I'm picking here. Dr. Selby's call, which was mostly around Terry was more about leadership,
mm-hmm.
and Dr. Selby was more about mindset. Yes, that's it.
Mm.
And I think between the two, my comment is more based on a real life situation where you see these things happen every day,
mm.
especially in an industrial space mm-hmm. that some of us are based in.
Yes.
So it's more a skills based environment.
Yes.
My real life example that I would like to give is I've got I'm the only black person in my team
mm-hmm.
in a specific sector.
Mm-hmm.
And the other black person that's in the same, let's say, engineering workshop
mm-hmm.
is the cleaner.
Mm.
And he's about 8 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what breaks my heart is that I think maybe also policy has something to do with it.
Mm.
When an opportunity comes up, let's say for an apprenticeship.
Yes.
You will bypass somebody that's been cleaning for the company for 8 years
mm.
to go hire Marius's Nahi or you know, whatever the case may be,
mm.
because they seem more legible
mm.
for the position than Kulego that has been leading for the that has been part of the organization for so long,
mm.
and you tend to overlook. So those are the sad realities of diversity in a way where. Hence, I also mentioned policy.
Mm.
That maybe the equality thing also plays a role in certain industries or in certain small spaces. Preference is then given to the, I don't know, I think in the white culture it's more prevalent to make sure your brother doesn't suffer, if I can call it that. Whether qualified or not. And that's why in many factories you'll find that supervisors, you'll find workers on the floor that are more qualified than the supervisors. You know, is it in the best interest of the country, or is it that diversity that plays, that comes in, that creeps in from the back and says, hey, but once you appoint a black person in this position, things are going to go haywire.
Sure, too so.
You know, are they also saying, let's hire whites because whites are not getting jobs because of the equality policies or BEAT policies or whatever you want to name it? So it's quite tricky. But I just wanted to have give you my input from a realistic everyday point of view.
Well, I really appreciate that, Terry.
No, I mean that lived experience that Tuso shares is so important, and it's something that one sees so often. I think also that the tendency to appoint males, even though we haven't said much about gender this evening.
Lots of these kinds of conversations are going to have to follow.
I mean, even the callers are all male so far. Yeah. I mean, maybe there's a whole queue of women waiting to call, I'm not sure. But I notice that all the time, that if you listen to a talk show in the morning, it's men. But then I think maybe it's women that are busy doing things.
They're busy trying to prepare children to go to school.
Exactly. But now, this evening... Yeah. Well, it's also still men. So I think that there's also a need for us to look at gender. But I want to say that what Tuso said about nepotism, I think is a very real issue that one comes across so often. You know, there's somebody appointing their nephew, who a white person appointing their nephew into a position which, you know, by rights should have gone to a black or a coloured person or an Indian person. So I think Tuso is spot on, and his example was really, really relevant.
There's a lot. I mean, we just scratched the surface. But this is really the beginning of what we are going to be calling Imbizos. We're going to be having these every Tuesday. And these are conversations we'd need to have. And we'll give them a lot more time. As Terry said, we haven't even touched on gender. We haven't touched on many, many issues. And we will. And I've got an answer to that thing about women calling. It's a long conversation. But I think it's real. It's true. Women don't call the radio stations, even if they listen.
So we must find ways to encourage them to, because we need to hear their voices.
Well, we must make spaces conducive for them to call, because I can tell you many who have an opinion are sitting at home, are not going to share their opinion in front of their spouses, that's not who they are at home. They're a different kind of, they think differently to how they will express themselves, because the space doesn't allow them that freedom. So it's quite loaded, and there are many, many reasons, and I think we'll talk about these things when we have our conversation around gender. Thanks, everybody, but I really appreciate you being a part of this show. We'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.